record reflect that the time is 11:05, February 13th, 2007. Also let the record show that we do have Representative Dugan, Dahl, Lynn, and myself, Chair Nguyen, present. We do have a quorum. Today we're going to be hearing a presentation from the World Trade Center of Alaska. Greg Wolf is the executive director. He's going to be here. But we also have Peter Ratner, who's their program coordinator. So we've got a very interesting topic here with the particularly, and I think we're going to look a little bit, maybe hopefully talk about Alaska's position in the Eastern Pacific Rim and our importance to world trade. Maybe expansion of further developments of industrial airports can be part of this conversation, but we can go into quite a bit of depth. Right now, and in fact, Mr. Wolf has told me that he has a long-time friendship with Representatives Lynn and Dugan, so hopefully we can delve on some of their knowledge and background to ask some good questions here. Mr. Wolf, if you would please state your name
and
affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Nguyen. For the record, my name is Greg Wolf, and I'm the Executive Director of World Trade Center Alaska. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to be here and to present information about the importance of international trade to Alaska's economy.
Excuse me, Mr. Wolf. For the members, for the committee members here, if you have questions, ask them as they go along. This presentation is approximately 1.5 hours. Keep that in mind. So I want to make sure we get through that. But I have asked Mr. Wolf to watch committee members. If you have a question, raise your hand, and we'll try and address them at that time. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you very much. International trade is big business for Alaska. How big is it? Annual worldwide exports for the year that has just finished, 2006, we anticipate will reach a record $4 billion. This represents about 10% of Alaska's gross state product. The gross state product is the equivalent of a national GDP. The gross state product represents the sum of all goods and services produced in a state in a given year. So at about $4 billion, Alaska's worldwide exports represents about 10% of the state's total economic output. Exports also, importantly, represent new money into the economy. This is money coming from outside into Alaska. I'm not an economist myself, but I remember from my Econ 101 classes that when new money can come into an economic system from the outside, that's a good thing. It's not just me giving you a dollar and you giving me a dollar back. This is new money coming into the Alaskan economy. Exports support thousands of direct and indirect jobs across the state. Direct jobs, of course, are those that are directly involved in mining or in fisheries or in manufacturing or some other area of resource development, of export production. The indirect jobs represent those people who provide services to those who do export, for example, in air transportation or sea transportation, freight forwarders, attorneys, accountants, all of those types of people who provide support to the export industries. The result of all this for Alaska is a stronger and more diversified economy.
Excuse me, Mr. Wolf. I would like to recognize that we have been joined by Representative Coring. Also, members, this copy of this presentation is available in the back of your packet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So why does trade matter? As I mentioned, it's a substantial component of our economy. It represents about 10% of the gross state product. This 10%, by the way, I should mention, the numbers that you'll be seeing here today only take into account the exports of commodities. In other words, logs, fish, coal, natural gas, seafood, whatnot. It does not reflect the growing export of services from Alaska, such as construction services, engineering, oil and gas field services, and whatnot. Unfortunately, unlike the export of commodities, where there's quite a bit of paperwork involved, there's export certifications, there's a paper trail, if you will, for the export of commodities. But when we talk about the export of services, if a company signs a contract in Russia to design a bridge or something like that, the same type of paperwork isn't required. So we often find out about that anecdotally, either through their own press release or an annual report or just in our work with them. But it is a substantial amount of dollars that is generated from the export of services, and I'll talk about that more in a minute.
Mr. Wolf, do you have any idea how many businesses in Alaska employ people who work outside of Alaska? As you said, with the export of engineering services and
right.
People power, as you may.
Right. Well, many of the companies that I'm aware of are the ones that are actually here in Alaska who have projects overseas. They will surely have employment over there and have hired people over there, but that work overseas also supports their business activities here in the state. I don't have exact numbers, and in fact, no one does about that. I mentioned that exports bring $4 million of new money into our economy. This is new money, not recycled money. Export jobs tend to be the higher paying jobs in the economy. The U.S. Department of Commerce did a study which revealed that export-related jobs typically pay 13 to 16% more than jobs tied solely to the domestic economy. And if you look around our state, there's plenty of evidence of this. The higher-paying jobs tend to be in those industries that are exporting, whether it's the mining jobs or the seafood jobs or the jobs at the fertilizer plant or whatnot. These tend to be the higher-paying jobs in the state. Exports allow companies in Alaska to become larger through expanded markets and customer base. If you think about it, Alaska itself is a relatively small market with a population of about 700,000 people. That's a relatively small market. So when a company is in a position to grow beyond the Alaska market, they usually have two choices. They can either expand to the lower 48 states and set up operations there, and there's plenty of companies that do that. But for others, depending on their particular product or service, it may be that their best bet for expansion is into overseas markets. How does Alaska rank? How do we measure up versus other states, and what does it mean for us? Alaska is one of the most trade-oriented states in America. In absolute terms, using the 2005 numbers for the full year at $3.6 billion, Alaska ranked 40th among all states. But when you look at it on a per capita basis, Alaska ranks fourth in the nation. And when you look at it as a percentage, exports as a percentage of the gross state product, Alaska ranks eighth. So for the individual Alaskan versus an individual living in another state, exports and international trade are really relatively more important to us and has a bigger impact on our lives than they do in other states. I also wanted to mention foreign direct investment. This is an area that doesn't get talked about a lot, but it's very important and fairly substantial here in Alaska. This is the investments that companies from overseas have made here. The biggest example of that is probably on the North Slope, Prudhoe Bay, BP, surely the largest overseas investor in Alaska. Looking at the entire United States, Alaska ranks 12th in the nation in attracting overseas investment. I think this is a pretty positive development for Alaska. These companies tend to be the multinational companies who do business all over the world. They can and they do business all over the world. So when they choose Alaska, when they choose to vote with their dollars to invest here, that's a positive statement about our business climate, about the ability to come here and set up and do profitable business. I think it's also a vote of confidence in our workforce, that they feel confident that either the workforce is here today or that Alaska is such attractive enough that they can attract the workers that they need for the particular business.
And with that, Mr. Wolf, I would just like to announce to the committee that we have been joined by John Mark Parmishan, who is the Consulate General for the United States in Vladivostok, Russia. John Mark, and he's also joined with Shelley James from the governor's office, is here. Certainly, I think an indication of what you've just stated about where Alaska's interests are with other trade countries.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Just for the highlights for the year that's just concluded, we don't have the final numbers in. We have the first 11 months of 2006. It'll be a couple more weeks yet before the final numbers that include December are in. But As through November, the Alaska's export totals worldwide was $3.9 billion, and we expect that when December is added in, that we will reach a record $4 billion in worldwide exports. That's up 12% from last year, and it represents the fourth consecutive year of double-digit export growth. Some other highlights: mineral exports doubled. This is mainly a doubling. This doubling reflects more the increases, in some cases record prices, that are being realized for some of our top exports like zinc. So I've noted here that the increase is driven primarily by higher prices versus higher quantities being exported. It's more reflective, we believe, of the relatively higher prices that were realized in 06 versus 05 or 04. So it means that our exporters are getting paid more for what they're shipping.
And Greg, when you talk about the exports of almost $4 billion of 12%, what is the largest, could you give us somewhat of a breakdown of what those exports are? Is it agriculture? Is it?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I'll be doing that on my next slide, actually.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question.
Representative Dahl?
Yes. Going back to the mineral exports doubled, and you said that's primarily actually in amount, the value, I guess, is what would be the higher price. But is that true across the board? I mean, you did mention zinc, but is that all the way, or is that just zinc, or just, and you didn't mention what mineral exports, so I'm wondering.
Through the chair, Representative Dahl, it's reflective. The increase is reflected in two areas. One is in mineral exports, and I'll talk more about that on some slides that are coming up. And the other area is precious metals. I think everybody knows that gold prices and gold and silver prices, but for our case, particularly gold prices, have been relatively higher in the $600 range than they have been in previous years. So it's reflected there as well. But you'll see a more detailed breakdown as I advance through the slides. One of the highlights of 2006 was China again. Last year in 2006, our exports to China increased by 41%. China is our fastest growing major market, and I'll talk in more detail about this important development. Also, our exports to Korea, our second largest trading partner, reached an all-time high last year. This shows you a historical perspective, so you can kind of see where we've been and where we are now. This goes back all the way to 1993. You can see that through the 90s and into the early 2000s that we were in a range of about $2.5 billion, with the exception of 1998. You can see the drop-off there. Some of you may remember what occurred in 97, in the summer and fall of 97, was the onset of the Asian economic crisis. The currency crisis over there that started in Thailand and spread throughout the region, the so-called Asian contagion or Asian flu, impacted Alaska as it did other states and countries who export primarily to the Pacific Rim. Our exports dropped by $750 million in 98 as a result of that, but fortunately they rebounded in the following year, stayed in a plateau again around $2.5 billion, and then in the past three or four years, you can see a pretty steady increase. And I think a lot of this is resulting, in some cases, from some additional production coming online. But again, a lot of it is due to the higher prices being realized as we see the growth and demand from countries like China, India, some of the emerging markets. Their demand for these resources are driving prices up. So what do we export? This shows our top 10, basically, in export commodities. Seafood has been and remains our largest single export commodity. It represents about half of what we export from this state. That's followed by the mineral sector, which is primarily zinc and lead, primarily the production from Red Dog Mine. The energy sector, this represents a combination of the LNG that we export, coal, and refined fuel products. There's no crude oil in this. We don't export any crude oil overseas. So this represents a combination of LNG, coal, and refined fuel products. The next category is fertilizer. This is from the nitrogen plant on the Kenai Peninsula, the Agrium plant. You can see that's grown into a sizable export for us. Followed by forest products, wood. Difficulties there in that particular industry. That number has declined, but wood is our fourth largest export commodity, and followed by precious metals, which is gold and silver primarily.
Say, Greg, when you mentioned fertilizers with the Agrium plant on the Kenai, is that 4.15% increased or decreased? How has that fluctuated due to the lack of natural gas that is available to the Agrium plant?
Mr. Chairman, for this reflects 06. I don't have the numbers in front of me if that's down somewhat from 05, but where we'll see the impact is next year. Since they've had a shutdown for a number of months now, we'll see a decline in this numbers in next year's numbers.
And do you have an idea of the fertilizers that are produced out of there that are used in-state as compared to exported?
My understanding, and this is based on, of course, conversations with that plant and through a publicly available economic impact report that was done about 2 years ago, well over 90% of what's produced at that plant is exported internationally.
Thank you.
And I know it's a tiny amount,
Representative Lynn,
but on aircraft and spacecraft, what in the world do we export from Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, that's a very good question. We have tried to identify what these parts or aircraft are. Obviously, we don't believe these are actually manufactured here, so we're not sure what they represent. They have been in Alaska at some point, warehoused here or stored here, but we have searched so far without results to find out what these particular items are. We are still looking, and when we do know, we will find out. We have some we've been able to make some guesses, but we're not really sure. But it's not a primary export from Alaska, so we're not we're curious about it, but not too worried about it.
Representative Lynn,
and I'm concerned. You know. We had to be careful where we export aircraft and spacecraft technology, because everybody we export to may not be our friend, and I'd not want that to be imported back to us in a form that we would not like.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, I agree with you, and I'm sure that whatever exports have been made in that category have followed the prevailing laws governing those exports.
If you could let me know.
Maybe this committee could appoint Representative Lynn with his vast knowledge of military and government stuff that he does to keep an eye on that for us.
And where are you sending me to do this?
Yeah, right.
Thank you. Representative Dahl?
Yes, if you did an overlay on this for what we trade down or send down to our lower 48, how would that look different? Would there be quite a difference?
Through the chair, Representative Dahl, yeah, there would be. Well, you would see about the other half of the seafood is exported primarily to the lower 48 states. With minerals, virtually 100% of the mineral production in Alaska is exported overseas, so there's virtually none exported to the lower 48 states. In the cases of energy, virtually 100% of that is exported overseas. If you think of the LNG is shipped to Japan, the coal is shipped to Korea, and now there's been several shipments to South America, but none has been shipped to the lower 48 states.
And could you keep going then?
Yeah. In the area of fertilizers, as I mentioned, over 90%, perhaps 95% or more of that is exported internationally rather than to the lower 48 states. And the wood products as well, this is primarily shipped to places like Canada. We also ship logs, like round whole logs, to China and Korea, markets like that. Your question raises a very good point, and one that I probably should have made at the beginning. I often do in venues like this, is if you think about what I've just said about virtually 100% of those exports in certain categories going overseas, one could argue, quite rightly, I believe, that but not for the existence of export markets, these industries would not be here, or they would not be of the size and significance that they are. When 100% of what you do at a particular mine is shipped overseas, and if there is no market locally for it, and there may or may not be a market in the lower 48 states, it really emphasizes the importance of these international markets to our economic present and future, but also to the viability of projects.
Mm-hmm. Greg, when we're talking about a lot of these export of these products, I noticed that you talked about a lot of these have no added value. Do you work with industry within Alaska to help have more added value to our raw products so that we have more jobs created in Alaska, more added value to our economy?
Chairman Newman, yes, of course. Many others in this state are working to add value to our natural resources before they're exported so that we can capture a larger portion of the value of that product before it leaves Alaska. In the case of fertilizer, that's a very good example of taking our natural gas and instead of shipping it out just as gas, but converting it into a product that can be sold. And as a result, that value, those 150 jobs down there on the Kenai Peninsula, is captured here in Alaska. So it creates good, stable, high-paying jobs, and we keep more of that money in our economy. So it obviously is a very important aspect of this. It's something that a number of the companies that we're working with, many of them are small companies, who are trying to take a natural resource from Alaska, convert it into a product, and then sell it overseas.
Mr. Chair, just one last comment.
Janet Dahl.
Thank you. I'm very surprised that we don't send any of our minerals south, and has that always has not always been the case? That has changed recently, or
Through the chair, Representative Dahl. To my knowledge, it hasn't changed. I've been in this business 18 years, and during those 18 years, virtually all of the minerals, particularly the zinc, for example, is shipped overseas, where there are smelters, where there are refinery processes. You'll see some of those countries where we ship these minerals to reflected here in a moment.
Thank you.
This just shows you the dollar value. You just saw the percentage value. This shows you the dollar value of those same exports. And you can see 06 versus 05. Seafood increased just slightly. You can see the real growth was in the value of the mineral exports. You can see there you can see the decrease, a little bit of the decrease in the fertilizer exports, which Representative Newman asked about. Wood products, roughly the same. Precious metals up. I believe this has to do with two factors. One is relatively higher gold prices, and then you have new gold production coming online in 06. You saw Pogo, for example, mine coming on, so there's additional output there. So who do we export to? We just talked about what we export. Who are the major markets? And you can see here that Japan has been and remains our largest export market at about 26%. Just to give you a little historical perspective, if I had made this presentation, say, 10 years ago, that number would have been 50%. So while we've seen a decline overall in our exports to Japan, I think reflecting the economic difficulties that country has gone through more than a decade of economic recession. The reason why our overall exports, however, have increased in spite of our number one partner declining has been their steady economic increase in markets like Korea. Korea is our second largest market, now at about 17% of our total exports. They've been growing steadily. And China. China has come on like gangbusters in the last 5 years, and now, actually in 05, for the first time in our history, became the third largest trading partner of Alaska. That's a position that's been held for as long as I can remember by Canada. Canada dropped to number four. China moved up to number three in 05 and maintained that in 06.
Representative Lin.
What's the situation in China insofar as their currency as compared to the U.S. dollar? I know they have some difficulty. I should know, but I forget what they call their currency there now in China. But there's been some real difficulty on this, on controlling their currency and basically undercutting us.
Through the chair, Representative Lin, you're referring to the Chinese currency, the yuan. That's
right.
That's a issue of great contention between our U.S. government and the Chinese government. The U.S. position, the Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary of the Treasury were, and I believe the head of the Federal Reserve were just in Beijing to meet with the Chinese government, and that was surely number one on their agenda, was to talk about the relative weakness, I guess they would say, the artificial weakness they may suggest of the yuan. What the impact of that is that it makes their products relatively cheaper for us to buy and makes our products relatively more expensive for them to buy. So in addressing a trade imbalance issue, I guess the U.S. position would be that they would like to see a stronger Chinese currency, which makes it easier for them to buy what we have to sell and makes their products a little less inexpensive as they are. So different people, if there was to be a change to that, the Chinese government has taken some steps toward, I wouldn't say letting it float. It's not a free float like some other currencies, but they have gradually allowed the currency ever so slightly, to strengthen, and They have their own internal reasons for not making any sudden changes, I think, which are understandable. But for Alaska, we have certainly benefited by the strong and continuing economic growth by China. As I mentioned, it's now become our third largest trading partner, and the prospects for the future with China are very bright for us. This shows you in dollar terms the amount being exported to various countries. Japan, well over $1 billion. Korea hit a record last year of $700 million, followed by China at $469 million, and then Canada. You also see in the top 10 here, you'll see several European countries. They're not in the top 4 or 5, but they are in the top 10. They tend to be sort of one-dimensional markets for us. In other words, what I mean by that is that they buy one particular commodity from us, and that's about it. Take the case of Switzerland. What are they buying from us? Well, it's gold. But that's about it. If you look at their other imports, they're not importing much else from Alaska, but they are importing gold. Belgium is almost all minerals, zinc, for example. So for those countries, they tend to be a bit more one-dimensional. Our exports have been focused traditionally, and they are today, and they will for the foreseeable future, be focused on the Pacific Rim and in Asia. And I believe there are three basic reasons for this. Number one is we have what they need. Many countries in Asia lack natural resources, either in some categories completely, or they simply don't have enough to meet the demands of their economies and their growing populations. So number one, we have what they need. Number two, we have relative geographic proximity. We're also on the Pacific Rim. And so there are relatively well-established shipping lines, for example, between Alaska and these markets in Asia. And then finally, and often overlooked, reason number three is that Alaska, as part of the United States, offers political stability to a country. If you're importing energy, you really are concerned about the stability of that country who you're buying from, so that supply will continue uninterrupted. So being part of the United States and enjoying that security and that stability makes us a reliable trading partner.
Representative Bell?
Yes. You said that our minerals, the smelting is actually done overseas. Now, is that also true for Spain, Switzerland, so forth? And what are we sending them? Is it the raw, absolutely raw?
Through the chair, Representative Dahl, to my knowledge, yes, we would be sending it essentially unprocessed, unrefined from Alaska. It's like when we might send a log, just basically a whole log. We're not selling lumber that's been cut. We're selling basically a round log that will be processed somewhere else. Same is true with the minerals. Same is true of the precious metals.
Please proceed.
I wanted to show you this. This just goes back 3 years. It's even more dramatic if I go back 5 years to show you our growth of exports to China. Just to give you an example, in 2001, just 5 years ago, our total exports to China were at $100 million. Today, it's $470 million, if you look at full years. So it's quadrupled in 5 years. For a small market, that may not be so dramatic, but when you're talking about one of your largest partners and your business with them quadrupling in 5 years, that's saying a lot, and it's a substantial increase. So I wanted just to show you, this looks back for 3 years. This shows the first 11 months of 06, 05, and 04. You can see that arrow is going in a very positive upward direction, and we expect to see that continuing for at least the next several years. This just shows you, summarizing this part of the presentation as an update, looking at the first 11 months of last year versus this year. You can see, as I mentioned earlier, we're up 12% over the previous year. How about the year that we're in now, 2007? What's the trade outlook? I made these statements at our forecast luncheon in January, and I indicated that the results would depend heavily on commodity prices, particularly minerals and metals. Some of the price gains in mineral prices are starting to come the other way. We're starting to see some prices coming down. Zinc has declined in price here in the last several months. So it really, with commodities, you know, prices can swing rapidly. One of the factors for how well we'll do in 07 will depend on the commodity prices. We anticipate our exports to China to continue growing at least through 2008, probably through 2010. Most of you know that in 2008, in the summer, Beijing will host the Summer Olympics. And the build-out, the build-up prior to that is going on. Those of you who have traveled to China recently have seen, it seems like Beijing and Shanghai, and it seems like all the major cities and some of the cities you haven't been to yet, I can assure you also, it seems like the whole cities are under remodeling or under new construction. It is an incredible thing to witness. I've heard estimates that something close to 40% of the world's construction cranes are now deployed to China. It's an incredible buildup leading up to these Olympics in 2008, and then don't forget there's in Shanghai in 2010 there's a World Expo, so there's a lot of work going on in those cities building up, and so as the country and as those cities continue to build, that should keep the demand for natural resources and what we have to sell growing.
It's amazing thing to me. Here you have China, which is, you know, a communist country with a communist philosophy, but with a very, very strong capitalism breaking out. And I've said in the past, you know, I call it kind of a schizophrenic dragon. You have almost extreme capitalism going on one hand, but you have the old school communism on the other hand. And it's amazing to see how these forces kind of work together. Somehow it's an amazing thing. Because you go over there and you see Amway is there, Buick is there, I think Walmart is there, and yet you've got this very old-fashioned communist economic state, supposedly. And it's amazing how that's going to work out. And is one going to overtake the other?
Please proceed. Representative Dahl.
Do they have any import fees, and are we competing in any area in that?
Through the chair, Representative Dahl, you mean does China have import fees?
Right.
Tariffs and whatnot on imported goods? Sure. Sure they do. Those now, since they have joined the World Trade Organization, the WTO, that tariff regime now is guided by the sort of international rules of engagement. They have, as when they entered the WTO, they were given, as countries are, a certain amount of time to lower tariffs to certain target points. Yes, like all countries, they have a tariff regime. We haven't seen tariffs as a big obstacle to our exports. There are sometimes non-tariff issues that have come up, not related to the import fee as you've described it or a tariff, but to non-tariff related roadblocks. By and large, we would hear from people. We work with companies day in and day out that are doing business with China, and we haven't heard too much along those lines, concerns or problems along those lines.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Overall, I'm looking at perhaps some increase in some areas, but also offset by some decreases in some of the other areas as some commodity prices come down. I'm expecting a year, next year, very similar to this year in the $4 billion, or just right around $4 billion. I wanted to say a few words about the World Trade Center. Some of you may be familiar with us. I know some of you are because we've had a chance to talk about it or you've participated in our events. But the World Trade Center Alaska is part of the global network of World Trade Centers. Most Americans became familiar with the World Trade Center and its facility in New York on 9/11. We are part of the network that we are headquartered in New York. There are 300 trade centers located in about 78 countries. Ours came to Alaska in 1987, so this year, 2007, is our 20th anniversary. We are a private, nonprofit organization. We're guided by a 18-member board of directors, and in your packets that I provided to you, you can see who those board of directors are, but they're business people, a cross-section of Alaskan industries, a cross-section of size, some of the largest companies and some of the smallest companies, and also a diversity based on geographic location from different parts of the state. So we have a good, strong board of directors. We have a statewide mission. We work with companies throughout the state, member companies, and as I mentioned, our directors represent that. Our mission is to assist Alaskans to compete successfully for trade and investment in the global marketplace. When we talk about international trade in Alaska, we're almost always talking about companies who want to export, companies who want to sell something overseas. From time to time, we work with companies who are involved in importing something from another country and then reselling it either here or somewhere else. But I would say 99% of the time when a company walks through our doors, they have a product or they have a service that they're interested in selling overseas. We have a small staff and a big agenda.
Greg, you're a private nonprofit organization status, and I just want to make sure you're totally dependent on the organization itself and not government agencies, and what you're doing is supported by industry alone?
Chairman Newman, it's actually a combination. We have support from three different sources, if you will. It's a blended source of revenues. We have a partnership and revenue from the state of Alaska. We have a partnership and revenue from the U.S. Department of Commerce, the federal government, and then we have the private sector who supports us through memberships. There's over 100 Alaska companies who have joined our trade center. They also sponsor events and whatnot. So it's a blend of support from state government, U.S. government, and the private sector.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about what we do at the Trade Center. I've distilled it to five core functions. One is that we work with companies to become export ready through information, seminars, and other technical assistance. When companies come to us, they're usually in one or two different categories. They either are, some are already doing international business but are looking to go into a new market. Let's say they've been selling fish to Japan for a long time. Now they think there may be opportunities in China or in Canada or some other market. They're not familiar with those markets. They don't know how the game is played there, if you will. They don't know who are the big buyers. They don't know what the regulations are. They don't know who the competitors are. They don't know the pricing strategies and whatnot. So we work with companies who are already experienced in international trade but are looking for new markets. That's one area. Another company is a typical company would be someone who's doing business currently in Alaska, maybe in the lower 48 states, but is looking to go overseas for the first time. And one of the questions they come to us is, well, you know, I have a widget to sell. What's a good market for widgets? And so we do work with companies who are looking to find new markets and new customers. We also work with companies who they themselves are not involved directly in international trade, but provide services to those who do. Transportation companies, freight forwarders, customs brokers, those types, professionals. Another area is trade development, and this is something that's relatively new to us in the last several years, where we've taken a proactive approach to finding new markets and new trade opportunities for Alaska companies. We've been doing business with the same three or four countries for a long time. Those three or four that I mentioned at the beginning, Japan, Korea, Canada, and more recently China. We've been doing business with those countries for a long time. We're asking the question, who will be the next Japan's for us? Who will be the next Korea for us? Who will be the next, you know, growth market for Alaska? So we're doing work in that area, looking for the new markets and then customers within those markets. Trade service, this is where a company has decided to get involved, and then that's where we come in with providing information and the hands-on assistance needed to make trade happen. This is sort of the matchmaking role of finding buyers for what they have to sell. Trade facility, we have a small, modest office, but we do have a conference room, and we do have a facility. So for some of our smaller companies who may not have their own meeting rooms or conference rooms, they can come and use the World Trade Center when they have out-of-town guests come or if they have business meetings where they'd like to have it in a little bit more formal setting. And Trade Network, I mentioned that we are part of the World Trade Center network of about 300 centers in 78 countries. Our networking involves more than that, though. We have established relationships, as I mentioned, with the U.S. Department of Commerce. This gives us access to the U.S. Commercial Service officers that are located in U.S. embassies and in consulates around the world. We also have relationships with some of the overseas government agencies that are involved in trade, for example, in Korea. Our second largest market, we have a memorandum of understanding with the Korea International Trade Association, which is the largest group representing importers and exporters in that country. So when we're looking for a buyer for an Alaska product, we can contact a group like that. They can go through their substantial list of buyers and help us find a match for what we have to sell. So we work with the U.S., with the state government here in Alaska, of course. So we work very hard to find those agencies, organizations, and people out there that can help us. I wanted to show you the sort of four areas of emphasis for us. We have our Japan Focus Program. This is sort of the name of our program that concentrates on Japan and the work that we do with companies there. Korea, again, another program where we when we do a trade mission or when we help a company find buyers in Korea, that would fall under this program of what we call Korea Connection. One of the most active programs we've had in recent years is our China Calling Program. We've taken a trade mission to Shanghai and Beijing. We've done two fairly high-level business conferences in Alaska where we've brought in experts, some of America's top experts on doing business in China. We've brought them to Alaska so that Alaskans can easily avail themselves to that information. We did that 2 years ago. We did it last year, and we'll be doing it again this year. The fourth one there is an exciting area, as I mentioned, in trade development. This is where we're out looking for the next new markets for Alaska. Who will be the next important buyers of Alaska products and services? We're taking a look at markets like India, Singapore, Vietnam. We're looking at countries that have a high growth projectile, where they're growing rapidly, and where their import needs match up with our export capabilities.
And Greg, you mentioned the Alaska-China Business Conference last November 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
What conferences are you going to be having locally that members can participate in?
Chairman Newman, we will be doing the third Alaska-China Business Conference this fall. I know last year and the year before, several members of the legislature did attend those conferences, and we would be inviting all of you to attend. We do this in a one-day event. We have seven or eight speakers come. These are recognized experts on doing business with China. Some of the speakers that we've had have 20 to 25 years of direct experience. We also have U.S. and Chinese government officials who are responsible for trade and economic development come and give their perspectives and talk about the assistance they can provide. I would say that our conference, our China conferences match up with those done anywhere else in the United States. I'm invited to a lot of those. I see who they have speaking and I see who we have speaking. I would proudly stand ours up against those events and say that we're enabling Alaskans to really receive high-quality, knowledgeable information about that market, both the opportunities and the pitfalls. I should say this, too. Going overseas, when you're in unfamiliar territory with a language that is different, a culture is different, a business environment that's different, there can be a lot of pitfalls. And so at each of these conferences, we generally bring in someone to talk about that. For example, this last year, we brought in an attorney from a leading firm that has an office in Anchorage, but they're headquartered in Seattle. They have a substantial China practice, and we had them come in to talk about how you need to protect yourself, whether it's intellectual property or if you're going to be signing contracts or if you're going to be setting up an office, if you're going to be hiring people, all of the things that you need to be careful of so that you don't run afoul of prevailing laws in that country, and just to avoid some of the pitfalls. So, of course, we're focused on the opportunities, but we're also aware that there are risks. And we, I think, do a pretty good job of presenting the potential downside that exists, doing business anywhere, but particularly in a country that you're not familiar with.
I had the opportunity to go to a couple of those conferences, and they were just excellent.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Lynn. We appreciate your attendance at those.
Too, just for the sake of our clerks here, so they can keep track of who's doing what there, to please direct questions to the chair. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, thank you for attending those conferences.
Yes, just two questions. Actually, a follow-up on the conferences, when and where. And the second question I would like to ask you is I know we're running out of time, but if you went back to that Alaska's Top Export Products 2006 and we added 5 years to that, how would that look different? And so if you had just a moment to reflect on that, I'd like to see where our future might lie.
Through the chair, Representative Dahl, to your first question, we generally do 2 to 3 major business conferences each year. Last year we did two. We did the second Alaska-China Business Conference, and we also did a first-time conference on doing business in India and Singapore. And for that, again, we brought in leading experts from around the country to speak on that subject. So last year we did two major conferences. This year we'll be doing China again, and we haven't determined absolutely what the other two conferences will be, but we'd expect to have in total 2 to 3 major business conferences this year. To your second question, how the export profile will be different maybe 5 years from now. I think one area we may see growth in is in the precious metals, for example. You know, there's a lot of new mines that that are coming on to line. I mentioned that Pogo came online in 2006. There's a lot of mineral mining and mineral metals and mineral exploration going on across Alaska. There's some exciting potential and opportunities in that sector. I think our seafood sales will continue. That last year they were up slightly, but I think our experience looking around and particularly the Asian markets, but also in Europe, is that there's a growing appreciation for the healthy aspects of our wild-caught fish. People are increasingly are concerned about where their food came from, and how it was the source of that, and how it came to be on their plate. And we think that the Alaska story of our wild-caught seafood is compelling. It takes work to get that message out, and we have a lot of competition in this area in selling things like that. But I think we have a compelling story, and when there are scares internationally, whether it's with mad cow or whether it's a bird flu or something like that, that opens up the doors for some opportunities for the very positive, healthy story that we can tell about our wild-caught seafood.
Greg, a little bit about agriculture, which I have a very keen interest in. I know Alaska is trying to get into the export of seed potatoes, primarily because of our geographic location and northern latitudes, our separation from other export states, Idaho, Washington, that may do seed potatoes, and Alaska's opportunity that we have there, again, because of our geographical separation for earthborne diseases, to not be in those potatoes. Could you talk a little bit about how that program is proceeding?
Chairman Newman, yes, I am familiar with the efforts by some here in Alaska to export either seed potatoes or table stock potatoes, table stock potatoes being the ones that you would end up on your plate. There's been some, I think, some good work done to advance the opportunity to export the seed potatoes. There's been work done at the university and others to provide the scientific evidence to those countries like China, Taiwan, other markets that can demonstrate that indeed our seed potatoes are relatively disease-free and pest-free. For some of the reasons that you mentioned, our climate, our soil conditions, and our distance from other markets that where these diseases are more likely to occur, more prevalent. So this relative isolation, if you will, and the particular climatic conditions that we have here do open the doors for opportunities. Still, it's a competitive business, and we'll have to compete in a number of areas, price and all other areas. But you can't compete at all unless you can convince that country's health inspectors that your product is indeed safe and is indeed what you say it is. And I think we've made some good headway in that area. We have not had substantial exports of those yet. There have been some test shipments over the past several years, but that perhaps is an opportunity of the future. Today, it does not represent, it's not represented here on these slides because it's not a large amount. But there is work being done to maybe open the doors for those exports.
Representative Lynn?
I remember, I forget how long, about a year ago now, I guess, you had somebody come in and make a presentation on blueberry gathering, potential for export on that. Does that have any potential for going overseas or anywhere else? That's a very interesting thing. I haven't heard much about it since. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, yes, I do know what you're talking about. There is a company that's doing some work on the Kenai Peninsula to harvest Alaskan blueberries and convert those into a nutraceutical, into basically a capsule form that would be sold in health food stores and in the organic and health food sections of your supermarkets. They believe that Alaska's climate and growing conditions and sunlight may enhance the antioxidant characteristics of those berries. I'm not a scientist, so I hope I used that big word correctly.
If I may, as you said, the content here, because of our climatic condition and the soil, is far superior than those in, I guess, in Maine and I forget the other, Minnesota or someplace, Wisconsin.
Yep, through the chair, Representative Lynn, that's what I have been told by those who are pursuing this project. Whether it ends up being blueberries or any other product from Alaska, herbal-type product. That market itself, I think you can just, you've witnessed in your own grocery stores where there used, maybe there wasn't an aisle at all. Now you walk through and it's an aisle a mile long, left and right, of vitamins and nutraceuticals of all sorts. So the question is, can companies here develop either unique products or similar products with better characteristics or more saleable attributes and do it price competitively to get into those stores with those products? I think there's a good story from Alaska. You know, we have, an environment that has a very positive story to be told, and I think in the marketing of those, that's important.
Greg, and for members of the committee, and maybe Greg, I don't want to step on your toes here, but to have the opportunity to have John Mark Parmashine in the audience, would you mind if he joins you at the table to talk a little bit about what the Consulate General for the U.S. Does? John Mark, if you don't mind. I think that would be a great
Chairman Newman, I'd be happy to have him join me. I'm actually at the end of my presentation. If I could just finish maybe one more slide and then welcome our guests.
Yeah, as long as members can.
I mentioned at the beginning that the World Trade Center, it represents really a public-private partnership that brings together the resources of three entities, the state of Alaska, the private sector business community here in Alaska, and our friends at the U.S. Commercial Service. I'll tell you that our office in Anchorage is located across the street from the Atwood Building, not by accident. It was by design so that we could have very easy interaction with the state government. And the U.S. Commercial Service has co-located their export assistance office inside of our trade center. So we've tried to create an environment, an opportunity here for one-stop shop for our business people so they don't have to wander all over town or from building to building to find the resources that they need to initiate or to expand their international activities. And I'll close by saying that we're very happy about this year. We're celebrating this year. It's our 20th year here in Alaska. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your leadership in this area of economic development, trade, and tourism, and for the work of your committee members. It's hard to imagine a more important area of our economic life that you're charged with here, and we appreciate the opportunity to brief you on this. Your packets have a lot more detailed information. There's also contact information. You or your staff, please feel free to call me or contact my office at any time if you have a question or if one of your constituents could use some help. That's what we're here for. We'd be happy to do so.
Thanks for that tremendous amount of information. Again, I direct the members to the amount of information that is into our packet. And thank you for what you do. Mr. Parmashine, please state your name, and I know that there's probably a couple questions from the committee here, and as long as committee members have a little bit of time and you're available, I'd like to take advantage of that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any prepared statement, but I'm very glad to be here in Juneau and to talk a little bit about what the U.S. Consulate General in Vladivostok is doing. Greg's presentation was, for me, also very interesting, and it's also a nice segue into talking about the consulate, because we do have representatives of the U.S. Foreign Commercial Service also overseas in Vladivostok, and their mission, as you know, overseas is to assist U.S. business and promote U.S. exports. And that also, by the way, includes not just the exports of physical goods, but also the exports of services. And I've been in Alaska now for about 3 days, and I've had some meetings up in Anchorage with Alaskan companies that are exporting services to Russia, particularly in the area of major petroleum projects, hydrocarbon projects that are taking place on Sakhalin Island, where there are a number of Alaskan companies that are involved in providing services to U.S. companies and to foreign companies, logistics services and others. This is actually my first opportunity to come to Alaska. I've been in Vladivostok for 2 years, and I actually wish I had come sooner, because there's a tremendous amount of interaction between the state of Alaska, between the citizens of this great state, and the Russian Far East, not just in the business area, but also in the area of cultural ties, in terms of what the Rotary Clubs are doing, in terms of student exchanges. I learned in Anchorage that the University of Alaska has the largest contingent of Russian students at an undergraduate institution in the United States is University of Alaska in Anchorage. So although Russia was not mentioned as one of the top export destinations for the state in the very excellent presentation that I just had the pleasure of listening to. I think it may fit into what Greg was alluding to at the end of his presentation, which is as a potential area for the future. And we at the Consulate General in Vladivostok have a team, a very small team of six enthusiastic Americans there willing to assist in any area related to interaction between Alaska and the Russian Far East. So why don't I just stop there? And again, thank you very much for the opportunity to address the committee.
Well, certainly thank you for attending our committee. And you know, it's a tremendous opportunity for the members. Representative Lynn?
Well, no, I just want to mention, you mentioned the number of Russian students we have at UAA. Like last year and this year, both, we have a very fine Russian intern working, going through different, working with different legislators here to see how we do or don't do the political process here in Alaska. I think that's very helpful when they go back home to Russia or wherever. You know, understand how it works a little bit better.
That's a wonderful opportunity, and of course, we're spending a lot of our time, and particularly the ambassador in Moscow, Ambassador Burns, is directing his staff to spend a lot of time working with the Russian government on issues related to democracy, and those kinds of programs, I think, will only aid that effort in the future. I mean, that progress has proceeded with fits and starts, but I think the interaction that we've had over the course of the last 13, 14 years with the numbers of Russians that have been able to come over to the United States is going to be a real positive for us and for Russia and our relationship in the future. I would just mention one figure in that regard that might be interesting to the committee. The United States government has assisted 50,000 Russians over the course of the last 13 years in visiting the United States. And now we're happy to see a lot of those programs are now being funded privately, either through Rotary or on a local regional level. And that's a very positive trend, and we hope that it continues.
Representative Lynn?
It's an amazing thing. Our current intern here, wonderful young lady, she spent quite a bit of time in Arkansas, so she has an Arkansas Russian accent, which is rather unique.
And John Mark, is there anything in particular that jumps out at you as legislators, people who do work with law within the state of Alaska? Is there anything that we can change, or is there anything that jumps out at you as to what could make trade between Russia or other countries, for that matter, make it easier? Is there anything that we can do to help promote that legislatively?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I mentioned, I've only been in the state for a few days, and I think it would be presumptuous of me to suggest changes already that you could be making. I would just again reiterate that we believe that there are opportunities for U.S. companies in Russia as a whole. The economy has been growing at a very rapid rate. It's somewhat of an underappreciated story in that growth has been over 7% for the last 5 or 6 years. The amount of U.S. investment into Russia rose by about 50% last year, and U.S. companies are doing quite well. For example, some very large U.S. companies like Procter & Gamble, for example, is one example often cited. They have more than 20,000 Russians now working for them, and that's creating jobs here in the U.S. as well. So we believe there are long-term opportunities, and maybe Greg, if I don't know whether you have any thoughts on Russia in particular and the Alaska connection.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chairman. The some of the early work that the World Trade Center did in terms of Sakhalin, where there has been and continues to be a large oil and gas development activities there. There's a number of our companies who found out about those opportunities and have since pursued them through trade missions that we took to Sakhalin in previous years. On those types of missions, we've worked closely with our colleagues within the U.S. Commercial Service or other branches of the U.S. government. Right now, there are several Alaskan companies that are doing significant business in the Russian Far East, particularly on Sakhalin. One of those companies that you're familiar with, who spoke at our recent conference, is Linden, the transportation company. They have the logistics contract for the Sauklin Energy Corporation. There's an Alaskan company that's providing the transportation for the goods and materials coming in and out of there. We have oil and gas field service companies who are doing work there. We have construction companies doing work there. We have material supply companies doing work there. What it demonstrates, and it was part of my presentation earlier, is that while Russia doesn't appear in our top 10, probably even our top 20 of destinations for commodity or goods exports, for the export of services, it is one of our major destinations. And what it demonstrates is that there's a growing number of Alaskan companies having developed world-class expertise here in Alaska, often in remote areas, often under very difficult conditions, cold weather or whatnot, with extended supply chain issues, and under maybe the strictest of environmental regimes, they have learned how to do this type of work, and those skill sets and those capabilities are in demand now around the world. And so we're seeing homegrown companies here in Alaska take their know-how, take their technical and professional know-how to markets overseas and apply those there. So it's actually pretty exciting. I've estimated the dollar amount of these service exports. In an article recently, I guessed somewhere between, $500 million to $750 million. After that article appeared, some of the companies involved in that work said, Greg, you probably have underestimated. We know one company, for example, alone, one company in Alaska alone does $250 million worth of services overseas. So I probably have underestimated it. It's a growing component of our business, and where we see a lot of that being applied right now is in Russia.
And just a little I might add there, too, is when your charts looked at the top 10, those were in commodity exports again. And those numbers are in billions and hundreds of millions, so that's not to say that there's not a substantial market between Alaska and Russia.
Chairman Newman, that's correct. The numbers that you saw today, the $4 billion, accounts only for commodity exports, does not count the export of services. If you added that in, we're reaching toward $5
billion. How are we doing, committee? We satisfied here with a little bit of what we're going here. You know, I certainly welcome the committee members for attending here and the ability that we have to reach out to other countries. And I ask committee members to look within the state of Alaska, in your own districts, what can we do to help promote locally? We now have the ability, there's a list of many people in here on the board of directors for the World Trade Center Alaska, a great introduction to Mr. Wolf, even our consulate general to Russia. Hopefully we take advantage of this and work within our own state, our own districts, our own industries and businesses, people that employ Alaskans every day to help promote those and create economic development for the state of Alaska. The gentleman, I thank you for your opportunity to talk to you. And at that time, the time is 12:10, we close this meeting.